This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Theaters shuttered their doors after the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, but this fall, Burning Coal Theater Company is performing a live show featuring one actor and a tiny audience. 100 Words for Snow follows the story of 15-year-old Rory, who embarks on a journey to scatter her father's ashes at the North Pole. Laura Lillian Baggett is one of the actors playing Rory. Laura Lillian, welcome to The State of Things.
Hi, so glad to be here.
Good to have you here. Jerome Davis is the artistic director of Burning Coal Theater Company and the director of 100 Words for Snow. Welcome back, Jerry.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Frank.
Good to have you. Laura Lillian, let me ask you this. The show opened last week. You've been performing in front of an audience of four people. And I wonder what this has been like for you to work in such an intimate space with so few appreciative members of the audience.
It definitely has been a different experience. It's not your normal theater, but I'm just happy to be able to do any sort of theater in this time. It is very, very intimate. It's very immersive. I think it's a really cool experience, and I think it's kind of cool that we get to do this.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit more about the show and your character. Tell us more about that. Yeah, let's hear more about the character, and then in the process, maybe you can tell us more about what's going on here.
Okie dokie. So Rory is a 15-year-old. I'm 16, so I sort of am right in that age. And she's just lost her father. She's an only child. And she's dealing with grief in the only way that she knows how. She doesn't feel the emotions. She doesn't have like a purge and cry and eat a bunch of ice cream or something. She sort of puts it off, and she comes to the conclusion that the only way to honor her dead father is to take him to the one place he always wanted to go, which is the North Pole. So she steals her mom's credit card, gets on a plane, and heads off on her adventure. And so obviously the North Pole and airplanes and such are very different than normal sets you would have in theater. So the way we're doing it is we're actually having the audience blindfolded during most of the show so that they can really sort of immerse themselves in their own imagination to experience what Rory is experiencing. So it's really cool.
And well, and a big help is the sound design that also helps bring everybody to the places that obviously
definitely, yes.
Well, so Jerry, let's talk a little bit about this production schedule and the idea of having any kind of live in-person drama, because I figure you've had your production schedule perhaps in place long before the pandemic. How have you adjusted your schedule, and how did this one make it to a live in-person performance?
Right. We wanted to keep as much as we could. You know, we had made a commitment over a year ago to do these plays this year, and two of them in the middle of the season were simply not going to be possible because of the number of actors in the cast. You know, each of them had 10 or 12 actors in the cast, and so to get them in a room and rehearse for 4 or 5 weeks was not going to be possible, however large the audience was going to be. And so we knew those plays were going to have to go. But the first play on the season was this one-person show. And obviously you can rehearse a one-person show with just an actor and a director and a stage manager in this case. And that makes it a safer proposition. And from there, it was a pretty easy decision to work out how to do it with the audience in order to make it a meaningful experience and not just something to tick off, you know. We did the play, but to do it in a meaningful way.
What about the sound design and the blindfolds? Was that something that came to you sort of in response to the smaller audience, or had you been kicking around that idea from the start?
No, that came to me after the pandemic. One of the theater critics said something about an earlier play they had been reviewing. They said that even though they were in a theater and even though they were watching actors perform, because the audience was so small, it didn't feel like a play. And so I started thinking, well, how could we ensure that the audience wouldn't have that sense of isolation, that sense of separation that that we're all feeling right now as we sort of hunker down for months at a time. And so from there, it was a pretty easy decision to work that out. And we got really lucky because a young sound designer just graduated from the School of the Arts over in Winston-Salem was eager to do the project, and he's a real keeper. You know, he's very meticulous, and the sound design is filled with things that he came up with and that the actors came up with. It's a beautiful, I think, immersive experience, to borrow Laura Lillian's phrase.
Well, it's something that conjures up visions of ice floes in the Arctic as well as plane rides, Laura Lillian. Let's have you share a part of the play where the audience is blindfolded during this part, and one where your character Rory is on the plane. Maybe you can set up the scene for us, and then we'll start the sound and allow you to go through. But set it up for us, will you?
Okay, so Rory has just gotten on a plane. She's just lost her virginity, so that's a thing. But she's feeling it. She's starving. She's trying to not spend as much money as possible because it's her mom's credit card, so she's not eating. She's sitting next to this woman who she's just met, who she sort of has this immediate connection with, who comes back later in the play. But she is right now, she just got on the plane, and it's taking off.
All right, let's hear a piece of a dream scene from the play, 100 Words for Snow.
I lean back in my chair and I look out of the window as we pull away from the gate, from Tromso. For good, maybe. I sort of feel everything falling behind me, getting smaller and smaller, like in a car mirror. Home and Mum and even Andreas getting smaller and smaller till I can block them out with my thumb. And I breathe out, and my eyes get so heavy, and I'm on an ice floe. I look up, and all around me are gray skies and white floes floating on black water. Everything's sort of wobbly. The ice and my body moving up and down, gently. Sea creatures swim the ice. I can't make out what they are. They're deep and dark. And I am so cold. I look down at my hands and my fingers are turning to brittle icicles. All up my arms, my veins go thick and blue with frozen blood. My breath, the vapor of it, freezing in my throat, freezing my lungs like twigs in a forest in the snow. And soon I'll choke. But I'm not afraid, because there, across the floe, is the body of a bear, only just dead. An ice bear. A polar bear. A gift I've been given just for me. I grow across to her, and I reach out my hand and touch her fur, and it's the softest thing I've ever known. And she's going to keep me alive. There's milk leaking from her nipples, thick as cream. Her belly's been cut open, and I know what to do. I plunge my icicle hands into her hot stomach, and the blood steams up. And my hands are my own hands again, covered in blood. Thank you.
Laura Lillian Baggett performing a piece from 100 Words for Snow, a live show being performed now by the Burning Coal Theater Company in Raleigh, directed by Jerry Davis, who is also with us. Laura Lillian, it was lovely, and I'm wondering about, for you as an actress, if it's what it's like to work with cues that are not visual and they're not words for you to sort of cue off of as you're going through your dialogue. What's it like to try to keep pace with a soundscape like that? Is that the challenge?
Definitely been a learning experience, but the people who do the sound cues are really good. It's sort of like a dance we do. I pick up on what they put, and they pick up on where I am, and it's just sort of a balance of give and take. So it's not like we just did here. This one was recorded, but in a live theater show, the people are actually pressing the certain cues to get it to fit what I'm doing and the pace that I'm working through.
I know you.
So it's really neat.
Yeah, you said you were 16 years old, so you haven't had a heck of a lot of experience as an actor. But I wonder if this is changing your approach or giving you some new insights into the field, having to work this way. Well, with all of these challenges, smaller audiences and working with sound cues like this?
It definitely is. I've done some other shows throughout the area. I've done another show at Burning Coal, and they're all big production-y sort of things. And this is so intimate, and the memorization, I mean, it's 42 pages of straight dialogue, I counted. But I've learned so much about being an actor and pace and memorization, as I said, and being able to work relying on just myself. Because in most situations, when it's not a one-person show, you are able to take off of another actor's energy, but I got to keep my energy up for the whole hour and 15 minutes.
It's just you and Rory through the whole thing. Jerry, tell me a little bit about this play itself and whether or not you consider it particularly timely in this moment.
Well, I do. I do think it's timely. You know, the specifics of it probably are not so much so. But if you look at it from a distance, this is a story about a young person who has woke up one day and realized that the previous generation has not achieved what they wanted to achieve, and that the time has passed them by, and that if these things are going to get done, she's going to have to do them herself. And there's no more timely story than that right now, I think. I think now is the right time to do the play, and that's one of the reasons we didn't cancel it.
What does it mean, though? You have an audience of four, right? Is that the maximum?
That is, yeah. Yeah, that's what we're aiming for.
So how do you, I mean, you know, just from a financial standpoint, how do you do that? How do you support the play with an audience of four?
Right. Well, we don't. We have to have help from other things.
Okay.
But that's always the case in the not-for-profit sector. And people have been stepping up. It's something that needs to be on the forefront of people's minds, because the live performing arts is the one thing that can't really happen in a normal way right now. Restaurants can do takeout. The shopping centers can open with limited numbers and stuff. But a live performance is going to have to be done, if it's done at all, in the way that we're doing it. And it's just not economically viable in the long term. So whether you're a fan of Burning Coal or Playmakers or Raleigh Little Theater or the Justice Theater Project, any of these theaters and many others, I would encourage you, if you're listening, to help them out. We need it right now.
Well, you say there's no other way. The other way, of course, is virtual. But how does that change how does that change things for live theater?
Well, I think it's giving us the opportunity to rethink some of the things we're doing. I don't think virtual performance ultimately is the same thing as live theater, but perhaps it's introducing some new tools for us to use when we are able to get back into the live performance mode.
Well, has it done that for you? And what are those tools?
I think so. I think it has. One thing is marketing. You know, for years we had done a talk back after one of the performances during each of our shows. And this has given us the realization that we can not only do that if we want to, but we can also do it in advance, film it, and make it available to a much larger audience than the, 112 people who showed up that day to see the show. And not only that, but we can also get people who are extraordinarily precise in terms of who's doing the talking. So in the past, we've looked at NC State or Duke or one of the actors who live in this community to talk, and that's great, and they provide a lot of information. But there aren't a lot of people in our immediate area that have been to the Arctic Circle, but we found some, and we were able to get them to do conversations with us and have our audience listen to people. There's one woman who's coming up very soon who has been to the Arctic Circle, I think, 12 times, and she leads an organization that encourages women to become explorers and to join those kinds of expeditions. And so we get to hear from her, and that's something I had just not thought about before. It seems like a simple idea, but it's not something we had thought about because the walls had encased us, and the walls are not here anymore for most of us, and so we're having to think and be creative again.
Well, Laura Lillian, I have to ask you one more question about performing in this intimate space. I understand that you performed one of the shows in front of four family members, right? They were all members of your own family. What kind of impact did that have on you?
Well, that has not actually happened yet. Mm-hmm. That is coming up. I'm sure hoping it has a positive effect, because this show definitely isn't for children. It's got some language and others, and I have a very conservative type family. So that's going to be interesting. But at the same time, it is going to be really strange, I think, to just be performing for people I know. But it might be more comfortable in a sense.
And
I'm hoping it'll be more comfortable.
We'll check in with you later. But meanwhile, let me ask you about, as a young performer now, in the face of this pandemic, thinking about how things might change, does this worry you? I mean, what is your sense of your future in acting?
Yes. Okay. So just to retouch on what you talked about with Jerry, I actually did a virtual performance this summer through Raleigh Little Theater Teens on Stage. And this is my second show during the pandemic, and it's scary. I don't know if I'll have an opportunity anytime soon after this, when this is over, to be able to do theater. I sure hope I do, but who knows? I am going to work my hardest to find those opportunities, but it's a scary unknown.
Laura Lillian Baggett is working her hardest as an actor and a high school student, and Jerry Davis, artistic director of the Burning Coal Theater Company. The show is called 100 Words for Snow, and it's being put on live by Burning Coal. Thank you both for being on the program.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.